May it please the Court, I'm David Shapiro. I appear on behalf of the 8 plaintiff appellants in this case, all of whom once composed Squad 2 of the K-9 unit in the Metropolitan Police Department here in the District of Columbia, including their sergeant who headed the Squad 2. This case is here on an employment discrimination grounds, both under Title VII and under the D.C. Human Rights Act. Your Honors, the district judge granted summary judgment in this case when the allegations and the evidence of record mandated that summary judgment be denied and the case proceed to a trial by jury. There were two claims here. One was the discrimination on the basis of race, and the second was a retaliation claim after the claim of discrimination was brought forward by the 8 plaintiffs, or was made actually administratively and also filed in the district court as a lawsuit. The facts of this case are rather straightforward. Here, the K-9 unit had four squads. Squad 2 was composed of 7 white officers and a single black officer. Now, these squads were, the composition of these squads in terms of who was on what squad was determined by seniority and preference of the officers. There were 42 Metropolitan Police officers involved with the K-9 unit, divided up into 4 squads and a headquarters type squad. What unit you were in depended on what shift you wanted and how senior you were and that would enable you to take that shift. In other words, it was all done according to the union contract and the practices of the Metropolitan Police. Race, it is clear and it is agreed to by everyone, including the Metropolitan Police Department, that race was not a factor in how the squads were formed. It was simply some officers wanted to have this shift or that shift, depending on family needs, depending on financial needs, and what have you. Now, Squad 2 had...
Are you suggesting it was something in the union contract that prohibited the city from changing the schedule?
No, that's not the argument, Your Honor. That's not the argument. But my point was...
Well, you're overstating the relevance of the union contract. The union contract gave them no right to maintain the schedule.
No, exactly. And I wasn't trying to overstate it. What I was simply pointing out was that the composition of Squad 2 had nothing to do with racial preference. It had to do with the ordinary choices of the officers and their seniority to enable them to effect those choices.
And under the new schedule, they can still do this, exercise their seniority in the same way.
New
scheduling arrangement.
Yes, okay, but not quite because of the retaliation. But we'll get to
that. Let's take them one at a time.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay.
Let's get to that. The district, now this squad, Squad 2, because of when it was scheduled to work, it had the midnight shifts on the weekend dates, all right? Now, that's the high crime time. And as a consequence of that, they had the most dog bites, which is like shootings. You understand that a dog bite is an incident, like a shooting incident.
Wait, I'm trying to understand on your first claim of race discrimination. What are the differences in treatment because of race if everyone in the department was made to change to the new schedule? And everyone is still allowed to exercise seniority. The city has a right to schedule people as they want.
Yes, they do have a right.
Everyone was affected by it, white, black, and everything else.
Yes. First, let me answer it this way. First, they did this because of the racial composition of this squad. In other words, Squad 2's race, the race of the members of Squad 2, was the reason.
Even assuming arguendo that is correct, and there's a dispute on that, there are different views on that. In a Title VII case, you still have to show that the result produced differences in treatment because of race.
Well, firstly,
everybody was affected by the new plan equally.
No.
Yes.
No, because Squad 2's officers received a 4% bonus, upkick in pay because they were on that midnight squad, and they were not on that midnight squad again.
That they didn't have a right to be there under the contract. The city had the right to schedule people as they saw fit.
No, but
they had no right to have that bonus.
I agree. And,
okay.
And in an ordinary employment case, you don't have a right to a bonus. But if bonuses are given,
right,
they can't be determined. Your eligibility can't be determined on the basis of race. And this squad,
the eligibility for the bonus under the new system is not determined pursuant to race.
But these people lost that bonus, which was based on seniority and preference as well, because of their race. The city made this change for it. Let me give you a hypothetical, Judge. All right? The University of Michigan.
Wait, let me get to the end of the line first on the
certainly.
On the non-retaliation claim. Are you suggesting the remedy for you would be that the city would be foreclosed from setting up the schedule? Is that what you're arguing?
No.
That the because I don't know what else you're arguing.
No,
you're
I'm,
arguing the city can't schedule
I'm ar-
offices this way. That the remedy from the court would be that the city would have to reinstate the prior schedule.
No,
right?
No, I'm arguing that the city is foreclosed from making this change on the basis of race, and that's exactly what they did.
I hear
damages.
What you're saying.
Okay, one aspect would be no change at all, but damages. Another aspect would be front pay, the pay differential lost.
So you're saying they're entitled, these officers in Squad 2 are entitled to money that would come with being on this kind of scheduling arrangement forever?
I'm
for
saying
as long
no,
as we would predict
no,
that
I'm,
be an
employee. Not at all. I'm saying they might be entitled to that, but first thing we have, we're entitled to a trial on the merits to see if race was a factor, was a determining factor. In this case, this is a summary judgment, remember, and there's evidence both ways. Let me get
if
to
there's
my
there's nothing to be remedied.
I believe there is something.
That's
to
what I'm trying to figure out.
Honor,
what
if rate? Look at ordinary employers are entitled to set up their shops as they choose, just like the district can set up the Metropolitan Police as
they
choose.
Yeah, here's what I'm, and you know exactly what I'm posing. There are any of a number of cases in employment discrimination and in labor cases as well, where there may be lots of things on the employer's mind, but the evidence shows that same thing would have happened in any event.
Yes, but that's not that is a question of fact. That is a question of fact.
But what I'm trying to get you to is, what remedy do you think you can get?
Well,
can you compel the city to reinstate the scheduling?
No, I might be able to convince the judge upon a finding of discrimination by a jury to compel the city to give these officers midnight shifts.
Really?
Might be able to compel
wow.
them. In the well,
I don't get it.
Well, hold on. Let me try to explain it to you. If you had a regular employer, and somebody was not given a job or was kicked out of a job, and you can prove that it was racial, you could force the employer to take the person back.
But you couldn't force them to create a job.
No, yeah. You're absolutely, well.
You're trying to create, you're asking the court to create a schedule here for a metropolitan police.
Not at all.
Yeah,
but,
you are.
Yeah,
because you've got to get to the, we have to get to the remedy question.
Well, look at.
That's
what
I have to think about.
Wait a second. Under both the Human Rights Act and Title VII, there's monetary damages for what they did to these officers, irrespective of back pay, irrespective of reinstatement, irrespective of that. Indeed, Title VII, even before there was a damage remedy, the question of reinstatement was a question, with or without back pay, was a question
that
of equity.
That was easy where there was a place to reinstate to.
I'm sorry.
All that happened here is they put in new schedules.
Yes, they did, but they did
that's
it
because. That's all that happened.
That's right, but they did it because, well, that's not all that happened. It's all that happened.
That's
in
all
the,
that happened relevant to this claim.
In the race discrimination.
That's all that's happened relevant to this claim.
Yes, indeed, but.
They
but,
put in a new schedule.
All right, let me.
Everybody in the department, as Judge Edwards suggested.
Yes, okay. Your Honor, the University of Michigan, because it's concerned about what it looks like in photographs and when people come visit the campus, that all African-American students, or overwhelmingly the African-American students in the lunchroom, in the student union, sit together. They self-segregate. Now, they're just doing this because they want to, for whatever reason, they have a right to, they self-segregate. The University of Michigan decides, or its student union body decides, that we're not going to have this anymore, that we're going to break that up. That by rule, everybody's going to have assigned seating, and we're going to intersperse the races throughout the lunchroom because it doesn't make a good impression to have this segregation going on. All right? Everyone is affected exactly the same. The white students, the black students, everyone in that lunchroom now has to sit where the university wants them to sit, in parameters that they want to sit in. All right? They've done this because of the race, because of racial considerations. Can they do it? No, they cannot.
Under the union collective bargaining agreement, the problem for you right off the bat is the employer has a right to do what we've done here. Has a right to do it.
Yes, they,
has
but
a,
not
a contractually but, agreed right to do it.
But not for
it
racial.
It is a race-neutral application of the contract.
But it wasn't.
It was.
No, Your Honor, there's...
It was race-neutral.
Your Honor,
the fact that a person says when they go home, or even when they're not at home, they say to themselves, and I'm really glad it's going to have a racial impact, doesn't mean it's not race neutral. It was a race neutral application of the contract.
Your Honor.
Everybody was affected the same
way. Your Honor, everyone in the lunchroom was affected the same way.
There isn't a contract there. I don't even have to wonder beyond that. There's a collective bargaining agreement here that the employer acts pursuant to.
Yes,
and this is a race-neutral application.
But it
is.
But it was not race-neutral. It was intended for racial purposes. If you look at then Commander Lanier's memorandum.
Suppose the employer says, I'm trying to think of something stupid. It probably is going to sound stupid. I want to schedule this person on bad weather days. And the employer says, and I hope that they get in a car accident going home because there's going to be slippery roads. And I really want this badly. Can the employee sue the employer?
If the employer does
and
this.
And there are other people assigned to the shift, too.
But if the employer did this because the people are of a certain race or the person is of a certain race, that is exactly what Title VII and the Human Rights Act.
Suppose theretofore this particular person had had favorable treatment and the employer said, I want him treated just like everybody else. I want him working on bad days just the same as everybody else does. And I want him to fall down and break his neck on the way home.
You might have a claim there where there was favorable treatment, but here it wasn't favorable or unfavorable. It was
favorable in their view.
No.
They had what they wanted before.
Yes, but
they don't have what they want now.
Yes, but they had what they wanted because you throw the chips up and they fall where they may. Now they don't have it because the district made a racial.
Now you throw the chips up and they fall three different ways, but they fall where they may.
But now the district is determining on the big, made this change because of the race of these individuals. That's the race discrimination game.
But that's not the theory of your case, Mr. Shapiro. You've argued this case as a pretext case.
Well, it is. That's right.
If your case is a pretext case, you lose if the district has any legitimate business justification.
The
race was a factor is not sufficient.
Now, wait a minute. Let's take that up. It is a pretext case because the district fogged this thing, intentionally fogged it, and that's an issue for the jury to separate. We can show that race was the premier factor, but afterward,
it has to be the sole factor on a pretext theory.
Oh, no, I'm sorry, Your Honor. There's an issue of whether it's the sole factor because this secondary reason, this reason that they give is made up after the fact, and there's evidence that it's made up after the fact.
No. There's memoranda from years earlier suggesting that they reorganized the shifts.
But they didn't do that until this memo on race.
That is true. That suggests that perhaps race was a motive in making the reorganization.
Your Honor, if that's true.
There was a pre-existing, as you know, there was a memorandum from some years back that had nothing to do with race, in which one of the supervisors was suggesting this very reorganization.
Precisely. The district then dredges that up after the fact, after there's a race discrimination claim. It's a jury question, Your Honor, whether how much you believe and what you believe was the real motive. And that's what we're talking about. If we were arguing to a jury.
They still get the 4% when they're assigned to the midnight shift, right?
If they're assigned to the midnight shift.
They get their same crack at the 4% everybody else gets.
No, they don't. Because, Your Honor, Judge
Ginsburg, get the same crack as everybody else?
No, they don't. Because of what happened afterwards, they don't. Because they were punished for raising the claim. And that's the retaliation claim. The moment they raised this claim, within a month, within 3 months, the roof fell on each of these guys in different ways. If there was a way to punish them, they were first guaranteed that everybody would have a weekend day off, but not our guys.
Let's forget about the retaliation.
Okay, but wait, I want to take one more thing up.
As far as the racial discrimination claim, They have the same crack at 4% shifts as anybody else, right?
Not necessarily, because the wait, let me take this up because I want to take it up with, in connection with what Judge Ginsburg asked. Judge, the way this was set up, all right, the excuse and the use of the earlier memoranda was that we wanted to spread the seniority throughout the squads. But that's not what happened. That is absolutely not what happened. The evidence shows that they didn't do that. The only thing they spread throughout the squad was the white and black officers. This was done. That's why I say it's a jury question as to whether that was the real purpose or whether race was the real purpose. And this is not the question of mixed motive. This is a question of whether the district's articulated reason for the non-discriminatory reason for the action is credible. Is it believable or is it pretext? And that's why pretext is the issue here. Because they said they wanted it after the fact. They said they wanted it for seniority, to spread seniority, but they didn't do that. That's not what ended up happening. Therefore, a jury could determine, on the basis of the evidence of record, that that wasn't the real reason. And if that's so, then under the weight of the case law, the jury could determine that the real reason was the initially stated reason by Commander Lanier and by the chief. Break up those white squad. And if that's true, irrespective of the fact, and it is important in considering the retaliation claim, which I want to segue to, it's important to in dealing with that to understand that these officers were made, because the district took this action against everyone, Judge Edwards, these officers were made the butt of their colleagues, and that was totally foreseeable, and that's part of the retaliation. You see, the whole system was what every officer wanted. It wasn't just the squad two that liked this system. Every officer liked. They were all in their seniority and their preferences happy.
Mr. Shapiro, you've actually gone.
Yes, I know I have, Your Honor.
Let's hear from the government. In,
okay.
Thank you, Your Honor.
Briefly.
Good morning, Donna Morosky for the District of Columbia. With me at council table is Todd Kim, the District Solicitor General. I would like to begin with a hypothetical that I think illustrates the fallacies of the plaintiff's case here. Let's assume that when Kathy Lanier became commander of the MPD Special Operations Division in August 2002, that Assistant Chief Broadbent came to her right away and said, there's some changes I'd like you to implement. I do not like permanent midnight squads for specialized units. I do not like 4-day, 10-hour shifts. I prefer 5-day, 8-hour shifts. And Commander Lanier decided that that was a good idea and made the change within a couple of months. All of the harms that the plaintiffs allege in this case come from that decision. The changing of the shifts. Assume, and that of course would not be any sort of civil rights claim. Assume several months later, Commander Lanier gets from Inspector Eiderheimer the report about the dog bites, and which says that 11 out of 17 dog bites come from Squad 2, which under my hypothetical still exists, is still Sergeant Ginger's squad. He also points out to her that this squad is disproportionately white. And there may be some troubles with civil rights. I mean, this is a squad that has nearly twice as many dog bites as the other three squads put together, including another midnight squad. And what Commander Lanier does in that case is to say, I think we need to make some changes. We need to change, spread out the seniority a little bit, change the composition of Squad 2 and the other squads, and let's take into account race, because as Assistant Chief Broadbent says, if we have six squads, I don't want three black squads, I don't want three white squads, I want squads that reflect our community. So what Commander Lanier does then is to transfer some folks from Squad 2 to the other three squads and transfer some people from the other three squads to Squad 2. In those circumstances, there would be no Title VII violation or no Title VII claim. This is purely a lateral transfer in which just no one has a claim. It seems to me that
are you saying there isn't an adverse action?
There was no adverse action, yes, sir.
Loss of pay.
No, at this point, everybody's rotating.
Yeah.
Under my hypothetical, everybody's rotating.
Compared to the prior situation, the plaintiffs have lost their premium pay.
But it's not as the result of the change of composition of Squad 2.
Well, wait a minute. My question was whether you're saying there's no adverse action here.
Yes.
To say it's not the result of the change is to say, yes, there's an adverse action, but it's not caused by something.
What I am saying in that, when we get to the second change that Commander Lemire makes several months later, she changes the scout compositions of the squad. These are lateral transfers. There are no adverse consequences as a result of those transfers.
No injury?
No injury.
So you think the plaintiffs don't have standing?
Well, I think they have standing. I mean,
because they were harmed.
They believe themselves, but their harm stems from not the change of composition of the squads, but the change of shifts. And it seems to me what they're trying to do here is taking zero and zero and to come up with one. And I don't think they can do that. The other point I think I'd like to make on this claim is that, as the court has pointed out, the impact of all of these changes, which happen to take place contemporaneously, so that enables the plaintiffs to kind of mix the soup up, had exactly the same impact on everyone. Everybody's subject to the rotating shifts. Everybody's subject to a five-day, 8-hour work week, and everybody's impacted exactly.
If this case had been framed as a mixed motive case, you wouldn't seriously be denying that race was a factor here.
I would say this. Commander Lemire's memorandum states that in realigning the compositions of the squads, she wanted to have taken into account seniority and race.
I mean, isn't the answer?
But I don't think that's illegal.
Your answer is yes, but so what?
It's not illegal.
Okay.
It's yes.
Okay, so
what?
Let's not argue over that. Race was a factor, but it's not illegal because it was not the only factor.
Yeah, whether
here.
There's a legal consequence.
There isn't any.
Well. Yeah, you could admit that and win anyway.
But I think that is all I would like to say, unless the court has any questions.
No. Okay, thank you, Ms. Morales.
Thank you.